Whether it's her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct has everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 135, episode 3 of Der Daily Zeitgeist, a production of iHeartRadio. This is a podcast where we take a deep dive into America's shared consciousness and say officially off the top, fuck the Koch brothers and fuck Fox News. Yeah, fuck it's Thursday, May 28th, 2020. My name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. still stuck in lockdown, baby, lockdown. Watching Shrek and Scooby, lockdown, down, down. It's courtesy of Christy Yamaguchi, man. And I'm thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
Hey, hey. Die. I'm not gonna hide my face for you. Media's trying to make me look a fool. You might hate me based on liberal lies. Fucking die. Okay, Christy, I'm a Gucci man. Crispy meme donut with that NSYNC throwback. Bye. Die. And shout out to anybody. I remember in the late 90s, there were in Los Angeles, there were groups of young men who would do NSYNC dance performances at parties, bar mitzvahs, quinces. Just a little bit. That's how big of
not
a wave
spontaneously, they were paid to be there.
Yo, there was this one kid, Sean Anthony, and his cousins would come through, and they're like, yo, he kind of looks like Justin Timberlake. They would loved it, and he had all the choreo down, and I was like, damn, man.
Sean
so
Tony
for these
man?
White kids.
There was at my high school, there's this like kid who was a jock who sang what was that Backstreet Boys song? You are my fire.
I want
he,
it
like,
that way.
Sang it at like some assembly, and it was like so bad, but like people were like, "Woo!"
Yeah,
it was so amazing.
Yeah, that was like when this kid played "Brain Stew" by Green Day at a talent show, and people lost their shit. I'm like, okay, fine. It's whatever. No shade. It this shit goes, especially when the drums come in.
Well, hey, Miles. We are thrilled to be joined by our first-time guest from Citizen Critic, Scott Janovitz.
Hello. I didn't prepare a song.
That's
I'm sorry.
Okay.
And you're a musician, too, Scott. I mean,
I am.
Man, you know?
The fuck, dude?
I didn't get payment. I didn't get paid in advance for the song, so.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Scott, where are you coming to us from?
I'm outside of Boston, Massachusetts.
Okay, me too.
Yeah, technically we're all outside Los Angeles. Boston. Yeah.
how is everything out there? What's
things
it like?
Are good. Are good. People, this is kind of an, you know, one of the epicenters of the COVID, and people are not being careful, man.
Yeah, that's the case everywhere.
I just went out to the Target, and people have got their masks on, hung down around their chins. It's an accessory.
It's like the thing where, like, when you, like, would wear a seatbelt, but you took that shoulder strap and basically like, put it behind your back. You're like, that's not, nah, all right, well, you're going to be head slamming the dashboard. But, like, it's the same thing. Like, well, it's kind of, that's like, good enough. I don't want to be
The seatbelt was uncomfortable.
Person.
Yeah, the seatbelt was uncomfortable. So I replaced it with a crocheted soft thing. Yeah.
I remember, like, in high school, people would just put the buckle the seatbelt behind them just so it would off the annoying beep in the car. And I'm like, this is not safety.
Like, go that takes extra work to buckle it behind you.
Yeah.
There were people who had it buckled in the whole damn time. Like it would never
buckle.
It was just like it. That's where it was.
Okay, well then that makes sense.
I get in the car with my father and he doesn't buckle his seatbelt and he doesn't buckle it behind him. He just drives with the thing dinging for like 10 minutes where somebody's like, hey, why don't you buckle that in?
It's like the smoke detector with the dying battery. It's like you just kind of get, it just becomes part of your reality.
It's amazing what the human mind can get used to.
Yeah, fade that out.
Scott, tell us about your show, man, because you are a sister show on the network as well.
That's right.
And it's, you know, everyone's like, you got to get these guys on. You got to get these guys. They got takes on everything.
You have to get these guys.
Yeah, I got to. Just let people know a little bit who might not be familiar with you. So when we start getting into it, they go, okay, I see what I think I'm into what Scott's putting down.
All right. Well, yeah, the show is, we have a tagline. It's critiquing the critics and reviewing the reviews. That explains a lot of it. We focus in on mostly movies and TV, and then we'll do products and services that are related to that subject. So, you know, we did an episode on Batman and we read a bad review of the, you know, the Tim Burton Batman movie.
Yeah.
And we kind of, you know, we riff on that for a while. And then we'll move over to like Yelp reviews by actual citizen critics who are reviewing things like, you know, a Batman costume for a grown man, Batman toasters,
like it's a little tight around the midsection.
This one guy, his wife just tears him apart, like accidentally. Right. She just goes in on him and how ridiculous he looks in this costume. And she's trying to complain about the costume, but as an aside, she just decimates her husband.
Oh, I love it.
It's great. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm somebody who like pays attention to Metacritic and Rotten Tomatoes the way that most functional adults pay attention to like the stock market or other, you know, indicators that have actual impact on them.
Right.
So I'm psyched about this show, man. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, we go to all those wells. We found a new one recently. I was like, I can check out. I've heard about Letterboxd. It's like, let me go to Letterboxd. There's some good user reviews on Letterboxd.
Oh, man, I can only imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Reviewing reviews is just like one of my favorite pastimes. Like one of my favorite Tumblrs was one star Yelp reviews of strip clubs.
Oh, my God.
And it was like the expectations and the entitlement of these customers was, and it was never really about the dancers or anything. It was about like the decor, the bar was sticky, the all you can eat buffet they thought they were getting was actually being ran across the street from the like the fried fish shack across the street. They don't have a kitchen on premises. You're like, whoa, okay.
Oh man, buffets, people go in on buffets. We did a Vegas centric episode and a lot of material on buffets.
Yeah.
People judge their entire vacations on the quality of the buffet. And it's like, man, it's a buffet on a riverboat casino. Don't eat anything on it.
Yeah.
It's like, the we need sushi more fish. Here is not that yeah, exactly. good on, yeah. on exactly this riverboat right. casino. It smells of cigarette smoke, like the tuna, everything else around
the tuna
it.
Was crunchy, but it was raw.
It was accidentally crunchy.
Yeah. It was space food, dehydrated.
All right, Scott, we're going to get to know you a little bit better in a moment. First, we're going to tell our listeners what we're talking about today.
All right.
So we're going to talk about Joe Scarborough because this is getting put on the same level as the president's tweets about how the voter fraud. So I just want to put a division in place as far as how I'm thinking about the president's tweets, because there's like suspicious things about the Joe Scarborough thing that the president's pointing out. That's not I don't think we ideologically need to be like Joe Scarborough's a saint if we're also critical of what the president is saying about voter fraud. We are going to talk about the George Floyd video, just the most horrifying, despicable, enraging, but predictable thing to happen this week. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about a Labyrinth sequel that may be incoming. Also, the astronauts are on the... I said the tarmac. That's not right. It's the launch pad, right?
Yeah.
So if anything happens there, we'll cut to that. It's being streamed by NASA, who is... I did not know NASA was as involved as they are. That makes me much less nervous.
I liked it when SpaceX was like this backyard thing.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Miles, you thought that NASA was streaming it at first just out to be like, look at this amateur yeah. shit.
Well, when Anna was like, yo, NASA's got the SpaceX launch on Twitch, I'm like, wow, okay, NASA.
Yeah, they've already got the hashtag fail up on the screen.
Oh, God, that would be the darkest thing.
It's like their social media manager is all like just drunk, like bilingual tweeting, like, check out these payasos over here at SpaceX. Like, what the
A lot of people don't realize, but that video of the flat earther trying to take off in a rocket was taken by NASA. They were like, yeah, no, go for it, man. Let's see how this goes for you.
NASA is actually the most evil fucking organization.
They're reveling in misery. They're like actually smart, not just people who take tests well, but also petty in my mind, which I'm making up. Why am I talking about Mensa when Jamie Loftus is not here?
To defend it.
But first, Scott, we like to ask our guests, what is something from your search history that is revealing about who you are?
Oh, yeah. So my most interesting search history tends to be on my iPhone, because that's where you're just kind of in the moment. Like,
yeah, summoning I need to information. Know.
I have no fewer than 3 different Safari windows or tabs or the mobile version of that open right now that are on vintage eyeglasses.
Oh,
vintage
eyeglasses. And it tells you something about me because I have been looking. I lost my beloved pair of vintage American optical eyeglasses in 2014, maybe late 14, and have not replaced them yet.
And I need them terribly. I
need
can't
them
drive.
To see.
I have 6 years.
I have a terrible backup pair that are barely held together that I've been wearing. But what I keep going. I just can't commit to a pair of eyeglasses.
Wow, that's it's like the Notebook or some shit. Like this pair was like so important. You're like, I could never another pair. I couldn't imagine.
Yeah, and that's my that's the rest of my life.
What are the what exactly are the what's special about the frames? I'm ignorant to the appeal of a vintage sunglass or eyeglass frame or whatever. But like, my problem is
that I have my heart set on finding the same frames again.
Oh, got it.
And cannot find them. Yeah, they were just a really quality pair of, you know, new old stock American optical plastic frame glasses. I loved them. And I, you know, now I'm trying to find substitutes, like something close to right. it, and I'm just having no luck. But I'll be sitting there watching TV and see somebody with cool glasses, and I'll be like, oh, let me search that and see if I can find those glasses.
Right, right.
Have you
right.
tried this this brand Luxottica? They're this company that makes like a couple. No, I'm just joking. They make all the glasses now. No. They're an international global monopoly.
Heard of Warby Parker?
Yeah, Warby Parker.
Or Warby?
No.
Yeah. Optician Zeitgang. If anything Scott has said about these frames rings true to you, please hit him up on Twitter. Help
please
this man
do.
Find his sunglasses.
Yeah,
I mean, his eyeglasses.
Do. Eyeglasses.
Is there yeah. is there a glasses like StockX? Like for people,
oh, shit.
For the real glasses heads.
eBay, I guess, probably.
Yeah.
Glasses head. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the glasses are my version of the sneaker. Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
right, right. Exactly.
Yeah. I just got to collect them all.
Just a frame.
What is what's something that you think is underrated?
Oh, I thought about this last night. Washing your face. Washing your face is underrated. My friends, go right now, not right now, when you're done listening to this podcast, go wash your face. Tell me how good it feels. Thank me at Scott Janovitz on Twitter. It's just a simple pleasure in life to wash your face in, you know, middle of the day, not in the morning, not at night as you usually do, but middle of the day, wash that face. You're going to feel better. You're going to feel refreshed. It's just the simple
thing. Wash that face.
It sounds like the first day of like camp with a bunch of high school freshman boys. You're like, yeah, guys, you should try this. Just washing your face. You're going to really like it one time. Just give yourself a little break. There is something refreshing, especially like if you don't have time to take a shower. Like I was just moving a bunch of shit in my yard that I had to move, and I was like hot, but I had to get in here to record. So I'm just like,
yeah.
Gave myself a nice cold
nice
face
splash.
Wash.
Yeah, man.
Oh,
you feel better?
It feels like, I feel like those old cowboy movies were like, you know, like there used to be like a wash basin and you're like, let me get
right.
this
yes,
one.
Yes, yeah, I gotta, yeah, exactly.
Like, you know, like
just
that was
let me
like
go to the soot off your face.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. With more soot. Yeah. Go to the communal right. wash basin. And
yeah, simpler times.
Yeah, yeah, it's just, you know, it's one of those pleasures.
Yeah.
Give it a try.
What is something you think is overrated?
In these quarantine times, I have to tell you, I think that leaving the house is overrated.
Okay.
Wow.
I don't miss it at all. I am happy to be in my house. I'm happy to have, you know, streaming concerts brought to me.
Right. Watch old live shows.
Yeah. I don't miss it. I don't miss leaving the house. I know a lot of people, I'm going against the grain. I know a lot of people really miss it. And
yeah.
I, you know, I'm rooting for the reopening where we can, you know, safely and wisely leave the house. But I personally will still mostly be at home.
This is, yeah, introverts are thriving right now.
Yeah. And I'm not even, I'm not an introverted guy. I just, I'm tired. I don't want to go. Whatever.
Yeah.
I don't want to go.
I thought I was more extroverted. Like, I like to talk and perform and things like that. But really, I get my batteries charged from being alone. Like,
yeah.
Just away. Mm-hmm. And I think, aside from like the untold chaos outside of my walls that is going on in the world, just like there is this weird shift in terms of like social expectation where it's like you don't have to be out doing something. Whereas before, like I felt like shamed into going to do stuff. It's like,
yeah,
just
you got
to
think of an excuse
all weekend. But I'm like, all right, I'll smoke weed in at a park, I guess.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That's
sure.
me going out, but I got my yard, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's probably not super great for my mental health to be locked in the house, but
sure.
You know, it's good every once in a while to get out, see friends face to face, and all that. I know that,
yeah.
But generally speaking, I'm happy to kind of, I'm happy to have my family here. You know, and
yeah.
we can do things together, and
it simplifies things where you don't
does.
Have to like when everything's going on, you have a number of ways to be like, oh man, I think I could be doing more, like being more
yeah.
fulfilled or whatever, and I think. Unfortunately, having to stay inside also kind of recalibrates like, oh, damn, like, you know, my mom lives up the street. I can help her. My dad's healthy.
Right.
Like my grandfather is like 90, but he's okay. Like, and I'm like, okay, that's fine. I don't need to go out as much. And I'm just glad there's no such thing as FOMO anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. I as a musician, this is great for me. Because I have my home studio here. I'm basically locked in the studio. I have a ton of new music to release. I'm kind of doing that now. This is kind of an opportunity for me. You just have to look at it positively. Like, what can you do with this time that you otherwise wouldn't be able to?
Right.
And finally, Scott, what is a myth? What's something people think is true, you know, to be false?
This is a music thing and a kind of a studio thing for me, but the myth that most rock people are familiar with is that Bob Dylan played at the Newport Folk Festival in 1965, famously plugging in and playing electric. Mm-hmm. Kind of a pivot point in popular music.
Right.
The myth is that the crowd was beside themselves, upset about this folky that they loved going electric, and booed him and were outraged, and famously folky Pete Seeger was backstage trying to cut the microphone cables with an axe. None of that is so
little cartoonish.
Yeah,
to be that especially history.
Now, right. There are parts of that there's different versions of that have gone around. Most people don't believe that, but people do believe that the audience went crazy about it, and not the case. I was reading Al Kooper's memoir. It's called Backstage Passes and Backstabbing Bastards. Al Kooper is famously the guy who played organ on like a Rolling Stone, kind of talked his way into it, and then, you know, he had this incredible career where he produced Skynyrd and Blood, Sweat, and Tears and all these bands through the 70s and into the 80s. He was there. He was playing in Dylan's band, and he's like, no, that's not the case. People had been seeing Dylan play electric. It wasn't the first time he picked up an electric guitar. Everybody knew he was doing this, and they were very polite, and everything was fine. And Pete Seeger was not trying to cut the mic cables. So is a big myth among the music community.
What about the Royal Albert Hall performance? Because so that's one that I had on, I'm big Dylan
good authority.
Head, and I have on good authority. No, I have the bootleg of it.
Yeah.
And people are booing kind of, and like somebody's like Judas.
But it's
not clear. I don't know. It could just be Bob Dylan being very dramatic and picking out the one person, being the Michael Jordan of rock music, just being like, and that was all I needed.
That was all I needed. Wait, was the Royal Albert after the Newport show?
I think it was.
So like, and it was out there that first, people like, didn't touring. Like. Right.
It was 65. It was 66.
Like this weird. I don't know. Reading about that whole like division, also just like watching documentaries about Dylan, where like everything he says, people are like, he's so funny and charming, freaking out.
They love him.
Really, like puts polite like NPR New York Intellectual Society into perspective for me. Like now, I just feel like it like puts all that whole kind of scene into perspective.
Right.
Yeah. And again, it's like you say, he does half the concert acoustic.
Right.
And they're perfectly happy. Knowing full well that he's going to play
the new stuff.
Right. They're not like, what is going on? There's a band here. Yeah. And these songs were released. Like a Rolling Stone was out, you know. And
wait, at these performances, they perform other songs they've also written as well.
Yeah. So the second set, the band comes out and they play, and he's definitely antagonizing them a bit because they're kind of paying lip service to the idea that they should be upset.
Right.
And they're having fun. They're like, oh, and they start clapping to kind of drown him out for a minute. And the guy does shout Judas, and it's so fantastic. The energy in it is so good. And
it's fun.
The band is on fire.
I mean, everyone should know fans don't turn on the artist they love this because they plugged a guitar into an amp. You know what I mean? Like Kanye West is out here as like white supremacist, and people are like, I love everything.
But have you heard early registration?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, late registration. Yeah, I mean, late college registration. Dropout. And it took me a while too. Like even when he had that one like moment on the Yeezus tour, or the Pablo tour, he was like talking about Trump, and people were like, "What?" People were booing him that time because they were like, "Get this man out of here!" But even then, it took me a second to be like, "Huh? Is that?" You don't immediately arrive to booing immediately unless they are saying something like, you know, have some trash, you know, political take. But still takes a while.
It does.
Yeah.
People are willing to forgive a lot from their favorite
artists. Absolutely. Especially like when you go to a show too, like when you know that they have a new album out that you don't like and you're just praying, you're like, please prioritize like the good earlier stuff. Like, I don't like this new experimental shit you're doing. And then it comes out and you're still like, well, I love them either way. It's not my favorite. And maybe it's less about me and it's about them expressing themselves. And that's what I'm paying.
Right. And yeah, there's something to that. You give them the benefit of the doubt to a point. You know?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, exactly. And then at the end of the day, you know, you march with your dollars. You know, if you don't want to go to the next show, then you
exactly don't. Right. Yeah.
All right, guys, let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course, and Season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan, and if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island, and secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. 2 420-foot vertical speedways, 3 launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
And we're back. And real quick, just wanted to talk Joe Scarborough, Joe Biden, two enemies of the president who are kind of getting looped into, I don't know, like they're being defended. There's this Twitter account, God, the God Twitter account, and they are doing like a fake
murder thing.
The fake murder plot, yeah. Where they're saying that like Trump murdered somebody because it's so ridiculous that Trump is bringing up this Joe Scarborough thing. And I'm not saying I don't know all the details of the Joe Scarborough thing, but
of the God tweet.
Of the God tweet. But the idea is that Trump over the weekend was saying, like, a lot of people are talking about Joe Scarborough. He's a very suspicious death of a person who worked for him.
Right. And staffer.
Right. And it is a very suspicious death. Like, that's the thing. Like, I'm just worried that people are lumping the fact that he's raising that in with the fact that he's raising the idea of voter fraud and being like, both of these are equally wrong. And like, let's focus on the thing that's actually evil, that's actually going to stop people from doing their God-given duty, which is to vote him out of office, which is the voter fraud thing. Joe Scarborough thing is suspicious. He was a, you know, successful rising politician in Florida. There was a suspicious death, like, in his office, literally. And a healthy woman who was one of his aides was found dead with like head trauma. They then were just like, yeah, she passed out and hit her head on a desk. The police were just kind of, you know, he was a powerful politician. He then retired with no really good explanation. So it's not like the furthest reach to be like, that's weird. But I feel like people are, I don't know, it's getting swept into this conversation.
But it's still massively inappropriate as president to conjure the conspiracy theory from your place as president of the United States. I get what you're saying too. Like, objectively, if you heard, he'd be like, that's fucking shady. Like, objectively, like, is there, you know, like, what is all the evidence there? Yes, there is enough. There's murkiness there, but I think absolutely wrong of the president to go out there and say this, especially like when it, again, all it serves to do is like torment the widower of this staffer who is like pleading to be like, please, like, Twitter, this is like, I'm just fucking, this was tragic. And like, maybe they know or maybe they don't know, but that's not for us to speculate, or at least for him to speculate on this platform as Twitter. But I do get what you mean when like people just completely, like, look at, I think, because this is the deal. We've fully polarized now. And on the left, just as much, or not on the, for liberals, as much as it is for conservatives, it's just like, well, what's the call? I know my uniform. What's the call? I don't care what the play is. Just tell me what it is.
I'm a little worried about that. Yeah.
But that's where we are. Look at the Tara Reid position. Thing.
Yeah.
The Tara Reid thing is completely gone off the rails. Before, it was like, we must listen to women and must take these things seriously, to like, shut the fuck up, man. Like, Joe Biden could shut the fuck up. Yeah. And I get that. That's fucking, trust me, it's frightening that Trump could have another 4 years in office, but I'm not gonna fucking shut my eyes off to shit when I'm like reading it and looking at the temperature and the culture and be like, these are things we have to talk about. If we ignore things, they continue. And that's why I'll bring them up, because I'm not willing to just completely skirt those issues. But there's definitely a group it's just part of our ideological world we're in, of the political ideologies that we subscribe to, is like, we're on fucking teams, dude. It doesn't matter. There's no objective takes anymore. It's just like, no, bro, like, fuck that, dude. Albert Pujols is the fucking greatest slugger of the Cardinals have ever had. Like, it's just, we're not able to really parse through everything anymore, because that's just the general tone of things. There's too much anxiety and angst over what the future is, that we're just become completely reactive.
I do think that people are recognizing that state of affairs within their own, on their own side, so to speak. Mm-hmm. I think more and more people are now kind of getting that and recognizing somebody else's take, wherever they see it, as, you know, unreasonable and extreme and ideologically blind. I certainly see that. And, you know, it's like, listen, I want to be on your side. We need a coalition, but you got to be reasonable. You know, you got to take things objectively and evaluate them as they come.
Yeah.
No, right. These knee jerk defenses of people like Biden or Scarborough, anybody, you know, none of us are here to defend Joe Scarborough.
Right. And I feel like that's just getting swept in. Like it's just, you know, it's a messy process.
Right.
It's an election year, but I just feel like people are having a hard time. And I don't actually think people who are following these stories have a hard time like holding two ideas in their head at the same time that like Trump and Biden can both be shitheads, but we're going to have to vote for Biden because Trump is like the worst thing that's ever happened to this country. I think it's more that like people who think about this stuff and like believe that the country is like too, that the people who, the voters and the audience and the readers and the listeners are too dumb to be able to like hold those two ideas in their heads. So they like end up putting things in very misleading terms that I feel like
You saying this is like, oh, I guess that is something I should think more about. Like, I don't know anything about this death. And
right.
When I read the husband's letter where he begged for those tweets to be taken down and he explained she had this undiagnosed heart condition. I was like, oh, okay, that's a new piece of information to me. I don't know what to think of it, but it's certainly something that I need to not just knee jerk, you know, whatever Trump says is bad and wrong. And I got to take the side of the other person.
Yeah, I have plenty of beef with Joe Scarborough from when he was a Republican and doing his punditry.
Yeah,
back
I mean,
then.
He's a Republican. He's also like a lot of his beef is like from the fact that he hung out with Trump like before all of this. Yeah. So like he's not, I don't know. And like
it's
probably
this New York scumbag class.
But I guess the thing is, we get distracted though, because that's precisely what the point of even bringing this up is, that it's completely takes all the fucking air. And we get it. We're objective enough to be like, yeah, that's a little disconcerting. That doesn't seem like a clear, but I don't know everything. So I'm not going to have an opinion
either.
Oh yeah, fuck yeah, Trump. Like, let this fool know. Or like, leave Joe alone. He's innocent.
Right.
I don't
It just seems
care.
Like a lot of energy is being spent defending Joe Scarborough. And like, I see it in other places too, just on the sort of mainstream Democratic and liberal take.
But
let's
be real, you know, like if you know, when you look at like, but you know, don't talk bad. It's gonna put people off. And me talking about it is gonna put people off. Like anyone who is choosing to not vote, that's a decision they're making because they clearly are fine with the possibility of Trump being president again. I am not.
Right.
I am not. So I will do what I have to do to figure out what I have to do to get to that mathematical majority to ensure that this man is no longer president. I have already acknowledged that the American political system is a cesspit that I want nothing to do with after working in it and knowing and understanding that these sides are completely illusions for a corporate class to maintain their business, and they just work for different industries. That's all it is.
Right.
Everyone has teams. The Democrats have a lot of investment bankers and those kinds of industries, professional industries, and then a lot of them like mining, extraction, fossil fuels, plenty of other business, like, and not to say that they're exclusive, but they all have interests. They all have vested interests. That's why the money goes into these parties to keep these people in office, to create the legislation that allows them to exploit our labor. That's all it is.
Yeah.
So I'm not being shitty because I'm like, yeah, this whole thing fucking stinks. And Tara Reid or not, I still have to look at Joe Biden trying to gatekeep blackness. So what do you want me to do? You want me to fucking skate by that one? I get this guy is fucking flawed in so many ways. I don't think he's going to do whatever he wants. He can mix up his own name for Donald Trump. It is what it is. But I'm looking at it and I'm going, that's not ideal.
Right.
That's it. That's not, it's not ideal. Then the ideals that I'm trying to advocate for are ones where we acknowledge people's pain, the lack of consent that we have in this culture, the lack of openness we have towards other religions, the lack of fucking fairness we have for races. That's what the fuck I'm talking about. So if you're not out here full-throated saying this is everything I stand for, I'm going to say, well, that's not optimal. That's not what I want, because guess what I want is better. So fuck me because I want better. All right. Guess what?
Yeah. Right.
You do better too in this reality that I'm envisioning. where everybody can at least, or at least we can begin to address some inequalities, some inequities that we have societally, that people can begin to feel that they are not subhuman, no matter what it is. Beyond race, beyond gender, beyond all of that, there is a message that's being sent to people. You know, like with fucking the Kevin Hassett, or whatever, the economic advisor at the White House, like human capital stock is what he was referring
to. Stock, yeah.
Get the fuck out of here. That's so inhumane. And that's the kind of thinking that allows black people to be slaughtered in the street, that allows trans women of color to be slaughtered in the street, that allows a more Islamophobic violence. Every kind of phobia is because this is just the... because we're not dealing with this bigger shit. We're too busy to caping for Joe Scarborough, whether or not what the fuck happened to his staffer years ago. I don't fucking care, man. Like, yeah, I guess there might be something there. And please, law enforcement, do whatever you got to do to bring justice if there is something there. But right now, I'm focused on right now. And there is way too much scary shit happening right now that is more pressing to me and my existence and the existence of a future family I hope to have one day.
Yeah. And people are out there defending that human capital stock remark as that's just a standard economic way of talking about labor force. It's like, it shouldn't be. Right. How about that?
Yeah.
That's not how we should talk about people.
Yeah.
We shouldn't talk about them as stock.
Well, it's because
that's literally
all that,
dehumanizing.
Yeah, well, that prioritization of hoarding wealth leads to these things like where Jeff Bezos or Amazon makes like a fucking $500,000 a fucking second, whatever. There's some ridiculous math of amount of revenue being generated.
Yeah,
And
for him.
Yeah, I mean, to steal a line from Drake, it's gross what he nets. This hoarding of wealth that occurs comes at the cost of our humanity, because the trade-off is, well, if I hoard all this money, that means all these humans get fuck all. That's right, all that. Right. And we've already set up that dynamic. So like, shit going on right now. I just want to
The pandemic has totally exposed that, in that these workers who work for his company are suffering, getting furloughed, you know, just being treated so poorly by a company that has an insane amount of value, and their owner, who is insanely rich and gets insanely richer literally every minute.
Yeah.
Why not just be a good guy? Why not say, hey, I'm going to take some of this unimaginable wealth and take care of these people?
Yeah. That'll keep pitchforks away from your property line.
Yeah, exactly. It's good for your image. I don't understand who's not suggesting that to him, and how does it not occur to him naturally?
I don't know. I think because it's like anything, right? We go into bubbles out of self-preservation, those bubbles become impenetrable. I think the less you interact with a more diverse group of people socioeconomically. Because when you get so insulated in there, it's asbestos, baby.
I've seen that myself. Yeah.
It's just so thick, you can't get through there, and it's carcinogenic. Like you lose your humanity in all of it. One thing to the Amazon point is there was that whole thing where a lot of people are pointing out that across, I think, over like 11 local news stations were running the exact same Amazon created segment talking about an inside look at their facilities, but it was penned by their PR people. And this is like this corporate media relationship that's coming into your local news station, where you're like local newscasters who you maybe grew up with or maybe know or whatever are saying,
trust.
Go and like, they gave us a glimpse. It's like they are ensuring the health and safety of all their workers. That's according to the PR team, because everything I've heard is they're firing people who speak up. So what the fuck? And I think that's
it's like
another despicable dimension of the way, you know, Amazon's behaving throughout all of this.
All right, guys, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back after that.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring the Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
And we're back, and I wanted to talk about the George Floyd video, another murder that would have gone completely unpunished, unremarked upon, probably, if the people who were watching it didn't have cameras on, and if the police didn't feel like just so invincible that they could just slowly... just unaccountable, just strangle someone to death, like over the course of 8 minutes, like on the street with people watching, and they were fired, and that, like, they need to be in jail. Like yesterday, they need to be in jail. 2 days ago, they need to be in jail. It seems like a new level, but I don't know that it is. I think it might just be more of the same shit that we just keep seeing. And I can't imagine what the feelings are of people who know him, people, you know, African American people in this country, like people who have, you know, children out there who, you know, when they see this, they're this person, like, this is something that everybody is in danger of happening to them if you live in America. Doesn't matter. It can happen in the middle of the street in broad daylight while people look on.
Yeah. I'm just at a point where I'm tired of like begging white people to stop killing us or thinking we are dangerous. I've had to do versions of this every time unarmed black people are killed, where I try and advocate for evolving your point of view or perspective on what a black person is or how they behave, how we look at the world, what our intents are outside of just honestly living like anybody else. There's no secret to it. We're not, our houses are not different. Our parents are not different. Our upbringings are not different. We still, we are human beings. And, you know, when black people call out racism, unfortunately, in this country, white people have a habit of immediately turning off because it's a thing that we're used to seeing in America. It's like, well, yeah, I know. Yeah, I get it. Everything's racist. But, you know, and I know that most people completely turn off because I look around me and all of the evidence remains of systemic racism and white supremacy in this country and the point of view that black bodies are a threat and are disposable. And, you know, when we can only advocate for our own communities in to a certain point until it plateaus. And the reason we advocate is because we're trying to send a message to the dominant cultures, the dominant forces in our society, the hegemonic classes in our society, to be allies, to understand, to see our humanity and say, hello, we can only say, please stop killing us so much until you have to begin to look at your own world and say, well, I have to also do some cleaning up around here too, because it's on one level, it's not just, and I don't mean this just for black people. I mean this for any group. There are plenty of groups in this country where we need the help of everybody to make sure we are not killed or mistreated or have our autonomy and sense of agency completely disregarded. I know that people, it's hard to hold people accountable, especially loved ones, friends, or family, because you can alienate yourself by being like, by calling racism out. But there's really no other way. You have to begin signaling to your fellow people, no matter what community you're in, whether that's me talking to to Asian people I know, black people I know who might say some weird shit about another group, like, yo, kill that shit. That's racist. Knock that shit off.
Yeah.
You don't have to flip tables, but you need to at least be there to say, bing, up, sorry, alert. That's fucking really? Not right. And I'm telling you, I know that's not right. And I don't like that you said that. I'm not going to fight you about it, but that's what it is. Because we are sticking up for ourselves as best as we can, and we are still dying. So now we need you to actually help, you know, stick up for our lives and stop listening to our music. Stop taking our culture. If you aren't going to stand and be counted when our lives are at stake, I don't know how else to say this. It's so I don't want to see people smoking blunts and white girls, or they're listening to fucking Lil Uzi Vert in their Instagram stories. And the next thing you know, the best they can muster up as a response to this racism stuff is like, LOL, that lady lost her job from the Central Park thing. Can you believe it? That's not, that doesn't heal our wounds. I'd rather see a video of you coming for your friend who's calling some shit ghetto or saying, oh, look at those thugs over, call that shit out. That makes me feel like you are actually trying to do something and actually advocate. And again, I know it's uncomfortable, but by doing nothing, we will continue to bear the brunt of unfettered white supremacy. So you can continue to be comfortable around your racist peers. And I just want to say, please, please, everybody out here is a human being. Black, white, Latino, Asian, Arab. We're all just trying to fucking live, man. And the whole deck is already stacked against us. Everybody. So why are we wasting our energy looking at each other like we don't give a fuck about each other? It's going to eat you up inside. We all need to just open ourselves up to really sticking up for our fellow human being no matter what. Whether that, if you're a black person and you hear somebody making some stupid comment about an Asian person and fucking coronavirus, shut that shit down. If you want to fucking say something about a Hispanic person going to their job or whatever, you want to say some dumb shit, you hear somebody say something, or you even have a thought and you think, I made a joke in my head. Please bring awareness to that, because that's the only way we're going to move forward. We can't continue to do the cycle of, oh my God, you're right, that's bad, and then just let the flame die out. Because having to walk around and think, fuck, man, could somebody just think, is it okay? Like this crosses my mind all the time. I have to throw I pick up my dog shit, and I might be something near someone's driveway, and I want to throw the dog shit away in their garbage can that's kind of up the driveway. Not even that far, but I have to think, is it safe for me to approach to throw dog shit away? Because I don't know this neighborhood. I don't know if someone's looking out their window and is just ready to looks at me at some certain way. It's tiring. We can only, I think, just as an entire race of human beings, everybody, we have to look at each other and just shut all this bullshit down, man, because look at where it goes. Fucking, it's only going to be 5 days till I'm saying the same thing again. and I'll say it,
yeah.
But fuck.
Yeah. And I think it's a really important point that it's everything. It's up to us as individuals, and these things, the small sayings, the small thoughts that are expressed around us, like those things, this is how they bleed from like things people think to, you know, somebody being murdered in the street because that police officer has been fed a lifetime of messaging that didn't allow him to, or didn't, you know, that he didn't view the person he was interacting with as a human being.
Right. It's just a threat to him. Yeah.
Right.
I think that what you're saying, Miles, is really smart. It's like, think of it on a smaller scale. You don't have to go out there and march, but look at these kind of, what's the, you know, think of it as the opposite of a microaggression, you know, it's a,
yeah,
being micro proactive.
Micro kindness.
It's just like, hey, like, oh, hey, that's not cool. It's going to take 5 seconds. It might make the other person feel uncomfortable or small in the moment, but that's what you want.
Yeah.
You know, make them rethink what they're doing. If they have any respect for you or your perspective, then they're going to question it, even if they react negatively in the moment.
At the very least, let your values be known to your peers. Let your values be known to your peers. If you sit idly by, they will assume. And that friend who you let that comment skate by, they go to their job and they're going to fucking do something to a marginalized group because they think that's how it works. That I guarantee you that's going to happen. Because we all interact in this world, no matter who we are, we come across these people. And they're probably not going home to a household where people are constantly like, hey, you should probably kind of expand your worldview on this and not be so narrow-minded or ignorant and try and be more open. That's probably not happening, but that's what we need to begin doing. And I think, and I'm not, you know, I don't want to even start a person's journey, right? If you're a white listener and you're thinking, man, I've never thought about this. I don't mean to come at you and say, you're fucked up and evil and racist. Fuck you. Look, we all have all kinds of shit. We are completely force-fed into our brains. What the minimum I'm asking is for awareness. Just a little bit of awareness. Be a little bit aware of what you might be thinking or what your first reaction is, and just take a second and be like, whoa, that's fucked up. I've caught myself doing that. And I have to go, oh my God, what the, I would never do harm to this person, but like my thought was really fucking problematic about this thing or about this event or whatever. And it takes a second to then say, okay, whoa, you're going to have to let that, don't renew this subscription to that fucking ideology anymore. Just let that one go and try and pick that apart and be like, that's fucking bad. You're like, oh, you know what? I realized this is when I was in junior high. We all used to make jokes like this about this group of people. And I'm like, it's a reflex I built into myself as a 12-year-old around other ignorant 12-year-olds. It's everything. It's not just race, man. It's how you might look at what a man should be, a woman should be. We have all these sort of informed opinions on what a person should or shouldn't be, or what is, you already know what they're going to be like. And we're not actually counting our humanity as being a factor in that, and that we can be different and unique. It's not all monolithic.
Yeah. And going on, I mean, I've had the same experience, you know, as a kid. You have these things that are ingrained in you that are okay. Like, I'm taught to accept all people, and I outwardly do that. But you have these things in your brain where you can use words that are offensive about entire groups of people. You can make jokes that you think are harmless. But, you know, I got to say to fellow white folks, you got to drop the irony.
Right.
That irony is the shield that we use to have those thoughts bubble up in our head. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, it's funny to me because I couldn't possibly believe that. That's why I feel like I can say this or think it or whatever in private or whatever it is. You got to drop that. And there's no other way to learn to retrain your brain. It might take a couple of months. It might take a little bit longer, but eventually you will kill that part that allows you to even think those things.
We all can
and accept it.
We all can do better. We all can do better.
Every
person can do better. So, you know, if you're thinking, does this apply to me? Like, it applies to me. And like, we need to find ways to, you know, be part of the solution, because this, what we're seeing is completely, completely unacceptable.
And I'd say again, I appreciate people who were running with Ahmaud Arbery and did the tribute run of 2.23 miles. Those are gestures and those are received, but it ends that it doesn't mean anything unless you're then willing to keep, if you can say, oh my God, that is awful that this unarmed human being was just summarily executed in the street and the police let that happen. That is so awful. Don't just let that thought end there. Say, okay, is it awful enough that I'm going to dedicate, not that you have to be in these streets, but I can at least have a viewpoint and be a node in this network of takes that will be the one that does not allow the bullshit to get by, that I can broadcast some positivity, and that I can know every person that I associate with, I don't have to worry about being on a viral video on Facebook pulling some racist shit, because we all talk about this. We all tried to check back in with our humanity and say, yeah, that was dumb shit we used to say as kids, man. That doesn't help. And actually, by joking about X group means every time I encounter someone like that, I've already fucking hardlined all this bullshit in because of this habit of thinking. Try and just look at everybody and be like, man, I know this person is just doing what they can. And they're just trying to live. They're not trying to bother me. They're not trying to fucking harm me. They're just trying to live. And if they're trying to live in a way that might be different to what I believe, or maybe at times illegal, then you have to figure out, try and extend some empathy to understand certain people. We're coming up in a society where we have no options. So, and again, the deck is stacked not just against people of color. The deck is stacked against everybody. That's why so many of the most powerful civil rights movements get kneecapped the second poor people get on the same page, the second working people get on the same page, and these fucking divisive barriers of sex, race, gender, religion, whatever, vanish. And you go, oh shit, now we're a fucking big ass fist.
Right.
We're not a bunch of fucking pieces of shards of wood. Now we have some structure. And the only way we can do that is if we can look at every single human being and say, I have no issue like fighting for you. I have no issue with you thriving as a human being. In fact, I believe that people will probably be less stressed out if their needs were met and we lived in a world where at least we can begin to address this. We're not going to live in a utopia. I'm not in under illusions like that, because racism will live for as long as people look different. That's just that is what it is. But there are enough people that are malleable enough and are aware enough to know that this is bad, that racism bad, just being discriminatory is bad, bigotry bad, and you can actually be somebody who puts the opposite out.
Anybody who is not in the ruling class can benefit from a united coalition of people, because it's the economic rule of all of us. Mm-hmm. That is the greatest villain here. That I think that we need to. It's hard for people to kind of see that gap where it's like, oh, I like black people. I like Asian people. I like everybody.
I don't have a problem with anybody.
But they're over there.
Right.
And I think it's great. Good for them. I'm over here. It's all cool. You know.
As long as they're there, and it should just be like, nah, you know what? That sucks that someone has to walk down the street and get assaulted in Boston because they're Asian and they have some kind of coronavirus shit going through that. That's fucked up. I'm actually the kind of person, if I heard somebody say that, I'll smack the shit out of them, or I will verbally do that to let them know that is fucking wrong. You know, and I think it really does take this feeling that the solution is that we actually have to be like, nah, man, there's no teams anymore. There's no teams anymore. Cause when there's teams, that means we let women fall by the wayside. That means we let trans people fall by the wayside and all these other groups. It's not teams, man. It's all fucking people. It's all people then stop buying into this because it's only causing more hurt. And shout out to all the tortured people on Twitter expressing, especially people of color on the internet, trying to fucking make sense of this, because it's really, it just continues. And we really all need to arrive at a place to do better. And that's all I can say. And again, we can only advocate for our communities to a certain point. It takes everybody. It takes me to look at people with mental health issues, advocating for their community, to say like, yes, I can be more empathetic. Yes, I can fuck any jokes about that, because that actually, you're a human being, and me saying that hurts you. I don't need that shit. I'm smart enough to find jokes and make real irony out of words and things like that, that aren't just being mean from habits that we all developed on the schoolyard that we thought was quote unquote funny. Just, you know, it's all come together. Fuck, man. It's the most passe shit, but like, I don't know.
That's what it comes to. Yeah.
But like, we really have to fucking believe that.
All right. Let's end on something stupid and
Labyrinth?
Frivolous. Labyrinth is, so you're a Labyrinth fan. Labyrinth. Both you guys are Labyrinth fans. I have never seen Labyrinth.
What?
Yeah.
Oh man.
Never
saw Jennifer Connelly. I mean,
it's a wonderful, bizarre movie.
I need to check it out. I was in love with Jennifer Connelly as a child. Then The Rocketeer, another fantastic Jennifer Connelly joint. Yeah. Really, actually, that movie kind of holds up in the choir.
The Rocketeer does.
Yeah, it's like Disney. Huh. So, I mean, I don't know. Don't quote me on that. Probably there's like, there's some weird Nazi stuff in there. I'm like,
you guys already hear Miles says Rocketeer is the movie of the year.
Right after Capone.
Rocketeer is the movie that perfectly describes our current situation.
Right. But yeah, like I loved it because it's a Jim Henson. There's Jim Henson characters in it. So for me, being a Sesame Street Muppet boy, Muppet gang as a kid, I was like, perfect. This is 1-to-1. And my mom, I also liked it because my mom, it was like one of the few kids movies, quote unquote, my mom would watch with me, rather than being like summoning the VHS babysitter. And I think it's because she was in love with David Bowie and his codpiece, Jareth. Yep. I always have fond memories of that film. It always has, you know, got musical numbers, got some like Escher vibes, you know.
The music in it is great. It's, you know, it's very 80s Bowie kind of mystical Bowie.
Right.
Did he do the soundtrack, or they just kind of tried to capture his vibe?
He sings, you know, most of the songs in it. I believe that he, I don't know, but I believe that he must have had a hand in at least writing and producing them because they sound so very Bowie.
Mm.
Not just because of his voice, but the sort of the vibe.
Yeah.
But they're good songs, and the creatures are a step beyond what we'd been used to from Henson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some of them really disturbing in a way, in a way that's acceptable for kids, but like really kind of off kilter. The whole movie's off kilter.
Yeah, I gotta watch that shit. I've been watching.
There's
a
betrayal.
Lot of,
there's
Sesame
all this
Street. Past couple weeks, just talk about VHS babysitter. Like, it's like you feel like your kid is like sitting through class, like not actually, but like that's like they're actually. I've seen my 4-year-old watch something on Sesame Street and then like put that knowledge into action, like just as well as he does when I, you know, put my long plays together with the sock puppets.
and I just wish I could get these damn kids to say Tom Brady's the real GOAT.
You know
Sesame
me, man.
Never.
The show,
anyways,
never.
There's a sequel coming to Labyrinth.
That guy, Derrickson, the guy who directed Doctor Strange. So
That's
already like, there's moments, the film is very promising. Visually out there. So I think that's a really good, I think I like that. I like to hear that the guy who put Doctor Strange together is going to be directing the sequel along with Brian and Lisa Henson. So the Henson hands are still in it, along with the trippy director. I mean, I don't, who could there possibly be a new David Bowie type character? Like, what would we do? Like, do we, is that even
who would be our Bowie?
Do we cast that? Do we make it not musical? Do we not that? Cause heavy lies that crown.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a tough one.
It would be like, you have to, Grimes if she never married Elon Musk. I'm trying to think of who our Bowie is. I don't know.
Florence?
Yeah.
That'd be good.
Florence would be dope.
Because she's Grimes got, like, and Elon Musk. Florence baby. Welch. Yeah, I think I like Florence Welch, James Blake.
James Blake.
He has no charisma though. But I would love to. Charisma. I would love to hear what those. If James Blake did that soundtrack, that would be. I'll settle for that. You know what, Florence Welch. Florence Welch for the Jareth equivalent character.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Why not?
All right. Well, so you guys are pro this idea. You're happy to go back and revisit the world of Labyrinth.
I don't know if I am. I don't know where I land on that. I'm trepidatious about that.
Mm. Yeah, all that to say is like any movie that we talk about, I'm like, "Oh yeah, that sounds dope." I barely watch them afterwards. I'm like, the idea is pleasant, and I will say right. that. Yeah. But yeah, I'm sure when they like more cast stuff comes out that might either fully be like, "Oh, this is going to be bad," or you're going to be like, right. "This could be really good."
Yeah. Right, yeah.
Well, Scott, it has been a pleasure having you on the Daily Zeitgeist. Where can
it's my pleasure to be here.
Find you, follow you, hear you, all that good stuff?
You can follow me on the streets of Boston. I'm also on Twitter at Scott Janovitz. The podcast is on Instagram at Citizen Critic Pod. Mm. Find us there. I'm around.
And is there a tweet or some other work of social media you've been enjoying?
Yes. I liked this tweet. It's not a funny tweet, but it sums up how I'm the sort of gobsmacked vibe that I'm in all the time now. It's from Dave Holmes.
Yeah.
He tweeted, I think a couple days ago, he said, imagine failing to unite people against sickness and death. And that pretty much nails it for me.
That's good leadership. Like, that is good leadership.
That's an achievement.
Miles, where can people find you and follow you? And what's a tweet you've been enjoying?
Twitter, Instagram, PlayStation Network, Miles of Gray, and on my other podcast, 420 Day Fiance, where we talk about 90 Day Fiance.
Nice.
Delicious. Stoner trash. A couple of tweets I like. One is from Sophia Chang, past guest, in reference to the Minneapolis incident, because one of the officers was Asian in the video who had their back sort of turned to this incident. Sophia tweeted, "Do not turn away from me. This image of an Asian cop turning his back on a white cop as he murders a black man symbolizes patently the anti-blackness that exists within our community. Just as this man is an accomplice to murder, so are we in the Asian community complicit in the violence and injustice that befalls other people of color unless we engage in the fight for justice for all, not just us." To my fellow yellows who love black culture but don't fight white supremacy as it crushes black communities, you're part of the problem, and please don't ask me to stand for your Asian causes, then shrink from engaging in a real conversation about anti-blackness. And I just think that's a tweet that can apply to any community, any group, and just a feeling of solidarity. So I appreciate that. To Sophia Chang, who, my goodness, if you haven't read Baddest Bitch in the Room and you want to hear about this woman who basically introduced Wu-Tang Clan to Wu-Tang Kung Fu, check out Sophia Chang. She's absolutely incredible. And then the last tweet I like is from Eve, at Eve_Kennelly. It says, straight couples are like, babe, 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 babe. Babe, babe, babe.
Oh, man. It's true.
Ashamed. Can I add a second tweet? I was debating between these two. This one made me laugh. This is from Jim Belushi, of all people. And he says, becoming a cannabis farmer has changed my life. That's Jim Belushi. All right.
Yes, Jim Belushi.
That's what it was. That changed your life.
That was what it was.
Danielle Betsy tweeted, unfortunately, I'll be thinking about this for the rest of my life. And it's a picture of a bumper sticker that just says, Gatorade should be thicker. What?
The fuck? Need some more viscosity in my electrolytes.
And then Randy at Randy Paint tweeted, Muhammad Ali, float like a butterfly, jellyfish, done. Muhammad Ali, sting like a bee, jellyfish. I am nailing this. You can find me on Twitter, @Jack_O'Brien. You can find us on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes, where we link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as the song we ride out on. Miles, what are we going to ride out on today?
Okay, so this is from an artist we've gone out on before, like maybe once. And it's I like this artist because we don't know who this artist really is. Scott, you may have ideas, but Clutchy Hopkins. People don't know what these albums appear. People think it's the Beastie Boys just playing instruments. People think it's other collaborators, but it's got this very like, I don't know, like stoner jam band kind of vibe where people aren't like absolutely shredding on their instruments, but they know their instruments well enough and their ideas are great. So like everything has like a really great feel. So this track is called 2:15, like 2:15, because all of the songs are just the track length. And it's basically just guitar, drums, a little bit of Rhodes, if you like that, a little electric piano, bass, and yeah, mystery. So if you have ideas of who you think Clutchy Hopkins is, let us know.
Awesome.
All right, well, we are going to ride out on that. The Daily Zeitgeist is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. That's going to do it for this morning. We'll be back this afternoon to tell you what is trending, and we will talk to you then. Bye.
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 Right, gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch stratacoaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.